everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see lying below the surface.
Yes, and Julie has introduced me to yet another great, great movie that goes in the pool room.
You hadn't heard of this before?
Well, I've heard of it, but I had never seen it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Hero from 2002, starring Jet Li.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what else to say about it here at the beginning. It's a Chinese movie, subtitled throughout, and it is absolutely gorgeous to look at. And I watched it with my daughter on a Saturday night. Then I woke up Sunday morning and watched it again because it's that good. It was really something.
I have to say, it's been a really long time since I saw this, and it came out, I think, in China in 2002. It was held up coming out here till 2004. Thank you, Quentin Tarantino, for pushing on that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he helped push it through, evidently. Yeah, it sat on Miramax's shelves for, they got the director to cut 20 minutes out of it or something, and then they just sat on it until Quentin Tarantino went, what? And started shoving hard enough.
Yeah, I did think while watching it that Quentin Tarantino would love this movie.
Oh.
Or was probably influenced by this movie, even.
Mm-hmm.
So that's neat that that was part of the story.
And then I saw it. Well, the first time I wrote it down about it was 2007. And that was because I read Jeffrey Overstreet's review of it at Christianity Today. So I guess it sat on my list that long. And I had maybe watched it a couple times, but haven't watched it for years and years. But I just remembered that it was so good. And I'd forgotten how simply beautiful this is. It is astoundingly beautiful.
It sure is.
There's more to it than that, but it's just
oh,
beautiful.
Yeah, you bet. And we'll talk about that. The director is Yimou Zhang, Zhang. And his filmography in IMDb is quite long. It was kind of neat. But one of the things that I noticed on this that was cool was he's got a movie in pre-production called The Great Wall.
Mm.
And here's a connection. Max Brooks is one of the writers.
Really?
Yeah.
World
War Z Max Brooks.
Wow. Yeah.
According to IMDb. Yeah.
That will be interesting to see because we'll talk generally about this movie, but one thing specifically is this movie reaches back into the national, would you call it, mythology of China in the same way that if somebody here made a movie about George Washington, except of course their history goes much further back.
You just gave me a good idea for a movie.
There you go.
There you go. But this movie, it has a mythic quality, mm-hmm. a mythic, epic quality to it. The entire time I felt like I was in myth. Did you feel the same way? Yeah.
Yes, it's funny because it's an epic movie, obviously. Cast of thousands, literally. Mm-hmm. Mythic, as you say, carefully done to help us focus on the story. But at the same time, it's also very intimate. You get to know the three to four main players in it very well. And you're really caught up in these individuals set against this mythic background, I would say.
Yeah.
So really briefly, I guess, the basic story is that long ago, the King of Qin is surrounded in his city by hundreds and thousands of warriors who won't let anyone within any closer than 100 paces unless they've killed one of the three fabled assassins who have been trying to kill him for, I think it's 10 years. And in comes somebody named Nameless, and this is Jet Li, and he's wearing all black, and they strip search him, and they let him come within 20 paces because he's killed various people and brought the swords. And so he finally gets within 10 paces, and he starts telling the king, who wants to know, how he got these assassin swords. What did he do to kill them?
Yeah.
And I do love something that the king says. There aren't a lot of funny lines in this, but when he says, "Who would have thought broken flying snow and is it broken sword were so emotionally fragile?" I just cracked up. And what happens is you see the story told and retold by the king saying, "Well, I think this is how the story went," and it's evidently a lot like the storytelling device used in Rashomon, which I've never seen. Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
Okay, it made me
same director.
I think it's Japanese and super famous, but I'm really exposing my ignorance now. It's probably not. You may have to look
all right.
That up.
I have to look that up too. I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you see is the story told again and again from various points of view, and you wind up having to decide whose story do you believe, what elements seem logical or truthful or whatever. And each time one of these stories is being told, there's a different color theme. And when I say color theme, I mean, it's really obvious. You know, one's blue, one's green, one's white, one's red. And I guess at the very beginning, which is one of my favorite parts that they don't retell, when he's fighting Sky, that's a story that's not retold, but it's astounding. And I guess I was thinking that was gray, but it's really the theme for that is water and rain. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it sure is.
And so,
yeah, because there wasn't really a specific color scheme there, was there?
I don't know.
Not as bright as the other ones. It was almost as if when I watch it the second time, you know, that's when you know all these color schemes are coming. And the first one I was thinking, I wonder if that is like the truth. This really happened. And then I started to think, okay, now these are all perspectives.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that that's so. I don't know.
Well,
because this whole, I don't know, there's so much, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but the duels between these people are amazing. And mythic is the only word I can really use. It's like, you know, if they're saying, okay, this is reality, yet that there's a scene where they're running around on water, although that was taking place in their minds.
They can run up walls. They can.
Yeah.
Well, it's a genre that we aren't familiar with called, I think this is how you say it, wuxia, which is a very traditional kind of Chinese martial arts film. So it's as if you'd say it's like a Western or it's like a war movie or it's like a, everybody kind of knows to expect them to do this. And I have very vague memories of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which I saw under bad circumstances. It was on a train going to Germany, and it was hard to keep track of everyone. And I feel as if I probably need to see it again to be fair to it. But they were doing the same kind of thing. They were in the treetops fighting. They were flying around. And so a lot of people in writing movie reviews of Hero would reference Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which came out before it, and go, well, this is his answer to it, or this is his attempt to one-up him, or I just think they're different movies, but just that same genre. And
Yeah. That sounds right to me. Yep.
Have you seen that, Crouching Tiger?
Oh, yeah. I remember Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I think this movie just blows that one completely away.
That was my impression.
It likes it. It takes that and then runs with it. If that's where he got it, I don't have any idea. I don't know enough about that genre to know what came before Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. But Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was the first martial arts film that I've seen where there was unreal things happening.
Yeah. I think all of us Western audiences were that way, unless we just already liked the genre, which was harder to find, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But this movie, its beauty and the choreography and... I remember Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon being interesting visually, but unreal. And this one, I never felt like it was unreal. I felt like I was in a fantasy world. I never looked at that and I said, boy, that doesn't look real.
Right.
You know, but I felt that way in Crouching Tiger. I remember them running across the tops of the trees and it looked silly to me. But in Hero, I never felt that way. I was just in awe the whole time. It was like watching art.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Well, and also the fact that they focus on so few main characters, and just by telling the stories again and again, so you're focusing on the different aspects of those people or the teller that comes out in it, you're allowed to kind of, I don't know, it brings you into contact that kind of takes you out of people who are running around among the trees, or even when in this one, you know, they're kind of flying and whirling and their sleeves are flying and leaves are going everywhere, they're on the top of the water running around. You're so interested in who's going to win and why. And maybe for some people, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was that way. It just didn't get me that way. Mm-hmm. But there's no mistaking who is who in this. And by the time you get to the fourth story, I guess it is, all those layers kind of go together and you feel like you really know these people.
Yeah, yeah.
And what?
Yeah, at that point, I was wondering what was true, and possibly even does it really matter?
Well, it did matter.
Yeah. Well, I guess it did.
In the end, it mattered.
In the end, definitely. It is like, yeah. Well, we can't. I guess we'll give up the end. But
yeah.
But one of the things right at the very beginning, right before you see any of the movie at all, there was some words. It said, "People give up their lives for many reasons. For friendship, for love, for an ideal, and people kill for the same reasons." And then it says, "In any war, there are heroes on both sides." So that was just words before the movie started, and then we see Jet Li come in as Nameless, and then get presented to the Emperor.
Right.
In a stunning scene, just by itself. I mean,
I mean.
As someone, you know, semi-technical, I guess, I'm wondering, were all those people really there, or was that, like, digital? Because there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people, you know, all standing there.
I wouldn't say it is China. They have thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah, they've got some.
But in 2000, and when would they have made this, 2001?
2002 it was.
Well, I know it came out in 2002, so around that time, I don't know if they would have. And also, that kind of thing, if I start worrying about that, it ruins the movie for me.
Yeah, I agree.
So I try not to.
It wasn't something that occurred to me the first time I watched it, but, you know.
Yeah, no, it crossed just, my mind. And then
completely stunning.
Yeah, and then I just thought, no, don't worry about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I would think maybe they were all, they weren't, or maybe it had to do with the sound work, because there's one point where all of them are talking to the Emperor and saying the same thing, but their voices are not together at all. They're together as much as, you know, a couple thousand people or a thousand people's voices might be if somebody's holding up cue cards off camera, but I don't know.
Yeah. So again, there are three assassins that are legendary that have been trying to kill this Emperor for a while. And Jet Li presents, he brings with him the swords and spear, the tip of a spear from one of them, and he as evidence that he has killed all three of them. And the Emperor allows him to get within 10 paces like we saw. And then the storytelling starts.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Emperor, of course, is, you know, he says, "Did, you know, was your sword so fast that you were able to win?" And he said, "No, that wasn't the only reason." Or he had, his sword was not the only reason that he won.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he is awful good at it.
Yeah. It's Jet Li, so.
That's right. That's right. We know that he's awesome. Yeah. So, it turns out, well, I don't know. I don't know how much to say at this point. Should we get into spoiler territory?
Yeah, okay. I think that's enough, and then we can go into spoilers. Because the thing to say about this movie is, if martial arts is putting you off of watching a movie, you can't think of this that way. Because it's really more like watching something like The Lord of the Rings or, gosh, even one of the old biblical Hollywood movies. I mean, it's on a scale that is has to be seen to be believed, and the artistry and beauty of this is it's textural as well as the color and, you know, the way the people are moving. there's the way the wind is moving through the clothing and the leaves. And I mean, it's just astounding. If nothing else, you should watch it just to see it as a piece of art.
Yeah.
I realize that's not appealing to some people, but this also has a really interesting story.
It really does.
And you're left with, people have made choices that are very important, and you're left with the question yourself, is this right? And I would say, as Westerners, I don't know if we can understand this movie the way the originally intended audience did, which would be the Chinese people.
Yeah.
Which we can talk about.
Okay. I agree with that. Yeah. To watch it as a work of art, but it is, the story is also deeply moving.
It's a great story. Yeah.
It really is. Okay. Now we are officially in this territory.
Okay.
Go watch the movie.
Yeah. And now they're back. So.
And now they're back. Yeah. So, yeah, the first thing he does is describe to the emperor how he dispatched the first guy whose name was Sky. And again, there wasn't any color things there. There wasn't a color theme, but there seemed to, you were telling me right before the podcast that you thought it was rain and what else did you say?
Just water. I mean,
just water, water and rain. Yes. And that, yeah, from the moment they fight outside at a, I don't know what you'd call the place. It was a chess something, an outdoor place where people play chess, but it was raining.
Well, I felt like it was a school that had, like, was open to the outside or something. I don't know. Because
yeah, chess,
didn't he have
chess
two
house or something.
Who were going to fight for him?
Yeah, yeah.
First.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he had, yeah, like a bunch of people showed up to fight him, and he fought like one and then two at once and then four at once and then, you know, a bunch at once, this guy Sky, and then he's on his way into the building, and then Jet Li shows up and says, "Stop."
Mm-hmm.
And then it commenced from there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, on the second viewing, it was interesting to note, okay, this doesn't have a color theme because, like you said, every other piece of the story has a strong color theme. But I like what you said about the water. And I wonder if there's a deeper thing there. Although, I don't know, the whole mythical quality of it, and because we're in spoiler territory,
mm-hmm.
He was lying at this point, too.
Yeah, he's pretty much lying about almost everything, except you feel like he did kill Sky, or did they show later that Sky just handed his stuff over? I think, no, Sky let him kill him
mm-hmm.
for the bigger cause right. So he could get close to the king. Well, I would like...
Yeah, and that's why I wonder, you know, if it's real or not. It's, I don't know. It's just, you know, why would you have... Well, I guess for witnesses.
Well, for
I'm like,
no,
you know, couldn't you just pretend and just go hide somewhere or just go into hiding? Well, do you have to actually be killed for this? Because then he tells the woman, well, the couple
mm-hmm.
that we're about to talk about, he tells them, "I can deliver this wound that's going to look fatal, but it won't be. I ask one of you to let me do this to you."
Yeah.
So why couldn't he have done that for Sky? I know that he explained it, but that's what made me wonder. It's like this mythical quality, this larger-than-life thing, and I was questioning the entire time what was true, even all the way up to the very end. I know you were saying that, you know, well, it matters what's true, but to me it was like maybe it didn't because everything here is larger than life, and there's this mythical/moral storytelling,
but
that
he also
I didn't come out of there feeling like I knew for sure what had happened.
But I feel like he also had to prove himself with Sky so that he got mm-hmm. their attention and they would even listen to him.
Yeah. Well, if he had brought the spear too, I mean.
I'm just saying, I just feel like these people were all high-level warriors, which meant that they also had an internal code that they followed, and art and their sword mastery and their martial arts were highly linked. And somehow I just felt like them, you know, like the calligraphy was important, and that's, you know, a form of art.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I felt that that meant they were more linked to what's true and honest and beautiful, because what's beautiful is what's true, you know, mm-hmm. especially in the way of Catholic thinking, things that are beautiful do communicate truth somehow.
Sure.
And
sure.
I kind of felt like that was the underlying culture maybe that they all were in. I don't know if that had anything
so
to do with what
did you feel then that as each story was told, we were getting closer to the truth,
mm-hmm.
and the last story was it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
But because the first story is his lie that he's telling to get him close. Mm-hmm. The
yeah.
second story is the king's idea of, I'll tell you what I think happened. The mm-hmm. third story is what really happened, and we see the ending of it. Interspersed with the green story, which is the king's story of why Broken Sword didn't kill him,
yeah,
which is also true. And I went looking everywhere, and I remember doing this before when I watched it. I went looking all over for if there was an internal meaning for those colors, and the director repeatedly said no.
Oh.
It was just to help you focus the story. And also, I believe, for his art. He said the blue sequence was because of the lake. The red sequence was because of, it might have been because of blood. But he goes, they're just colors. But I think the great thing about that, in a sense, is it leaves you free to kind of see what you want to in it. Just like an artist painting.
Yeah.
You see what's there.
When I watch
there.
It, you know. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, and maybe you are reading your own culture into it and things, but
mm-hmm.
it was like the red was very passionate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is what was going on there. A lot of passionate feelings.
Oh yeah.
But you know, and then, so it's hard not to try to attach the colors to emotions. You know, like when I do theater, you know, usually you're like, okay, blue is going to be cold. It's going to be
mm-hmm.
Maybe darkness, you know, it does evoke something in us. And I don't know if that works across all cultures or if it's just, you know, like a European cultural thing that blue kind of feels this way to us. But that'd be an interesting thing to think about, too. But this movie, you know, coming from China. Yeah, it's interesting that the director said, well, I didn't have a purpose there. I just wanted it to be distinct, you know?
Well, it made me think of Guillermo del Toro talking on the commentary about Pan's Labyrinth and how carefully he considered all that.
Yeah.
And I thought, that director kept saying that. So if that's really true, and that's all I have to go by, then
yeah.
he's a much simpler thinker than Guillermo del Toro because he could have done something with it. On the other hand, he could have just said, I want to do this. It leaves it all open to you. Because when you think about it, we are looking at the white version of this completely differently than somebody from Asia would, where that's a color of mourning.
Hmm.
If it was all based around black, now he said that was because the scenes with the cliffs, you know, those kind of yellow cliffs that they're near when they're in the sand and at the end and they're riding their horses, that white really went well with that. So that's why everything was white.
Interesting.
He just really...
And you also mentioned that the emperor was dressed in black, and he was always kind of in a black backdrop and everything.
His men were all black.
Yeah, so that's interesting, too.
Candles were all... Or the little... Yeah, I guess they were candles, though. Were all black.
Mm-hmm. So it's like black is the absence of everything. But again, I'm trying to read some meaning into it that probably isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really effective. And you said that you had read somewhere that they were talking about, you know, maybe the emperor was like a, you know, trapped on a spider web or...
No, he was the spider.
He was the spider on a web, right?
That's how somebody saw him.
Yeah. And that's not a bad way to look at that. He definitely was trapped. And the blackness really fits that well. And then the candles in front of him in contrast to that darkness, that was cool
mm-hmm.
too.
Well, because he is, even if he's not trapped, he's like a spider. Mm-hmm. The web is the only way he knows how to live.
Yeah, he can't bring anybody to him that isn't caught in the web because
mm-hmm.
he can't go out. He
yeah.
can't go out there. Yeah.
But the idea of, and we should have mentioned this before the spoilers, I guess, but the idea that the King of Qin is fighting to consume or take over the six kingdoms. and make it all into one unified country was kind of an interesting theme, because I think, to me, it kind of leaves you as an American going, well, yeah, but wait a minute, individualism is a really good thing. What about the people who are getting killed during this struggle? And of course, it's mythic, so you're not, I think you're not supposed to worry about it that much, but that's what's mm-hmm. driving the assassins. They've seen people they know and love and towns get wiped out by his ruthless soldiers and his orders, and so they want to stop him and preserve their countries. But as I was watching this, all I could think of was Samuel Shellabarger, who, you know, we read Prince of Foxes.
Sure, yeah.
That is based around Andrea Orsini working with Cesare Borgia, trying to unify Italy. He's got another book, Shellabarger does, about unifying France when it's all these little duchies. And then he has yet another book, I think, that's also about Italy when it's all these little countries. And so in a lot of those, the theme is unification is good, because otherwise everybody else comes in and eats you alive. If you don't have that, whatever is common among you that you're all working together on, like the one about France, the Italians are coming in and taking over little duchies, the English are coming in, you know, and if the French don't get it together and become a real country and unify themselves and stand up for themselves, they're destroyed. So I looked at what the Chinese king, or, you know, eventually the first emperor did, knowing he's, you know, he was cruel and he was this and that, but also knowing that I kind of feel like those things have to happen. Countries must be made. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, I'm reminded of a quote. I'm looking it up right now, but it's you can have a couple different views, you know. You know, unification is good, but, you know, you've got to sacrifice. And, you know, by the end of the movie, Jet Li was like, okay, the importance of keeping my own country is less important to me than peace in general.
Yeah.
And if we unify under a single ruler, we can have peace amongst each other.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that alone is going to be a struggle, you know, and you're reminded of the Civil War, where, you know, mm-hmm. so many people died to keep the United States together.
Our own revolution.
Yeah, our own revolution.
And what about all the struggles that have gone on in our country since then, where not just the Civil War, but other times when, you know, Texas was its own country and then joined up and those sort of things.
Yeah, so I came across this quote, which is also Asian. It says, the empire, long divided, must unite. Long united, must divide. Thus it has ever been. That's from something called The Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Luao Guanzong from the 14th century. And I have no idea how I ran across that quote, but it blew me away when I saw it. I was like, yeah, that's interesting, because it really is just, you know, a big cycle. You know, we fight to pull together and unify, and then we fight to divide.
Yeah.
It just seems to be a constant struggle.
And kind of along those lines is, and how do we think of it when we see it is, I know I read Stephen, I never can say his name right, Graydonis review, and he said, never have I realized so strongly that this is for a culture that's not mine. That really made him feel like an outsider. And Jeffrey Overstreet said that the director poses a heartfelt challenge. He acknowledges the value of unification and peace. He knows that militant resistance of the empire's progress can lead only to more violence and loss. But he reminds the viewer that the peculiarity of unique, diverse cultures produces valuable, irreplaceable rewards in people. It is as if the storyteller cannot find a satisfactory conclusion to his own epic.
Yeah, and that's really true, isn't it? Because these remarkable people came out of those other countries, you know, out of that diversity that you're talking about. And they sacrifice themselves for a cause of less diversity.
Well... flying snow does not.
flying snow.
The woman at the very end in the white story.
Yeah.
Broken Sword is the one who...
But why? I mean, she sacrificed herself, no?
She sacrificed herself because he was dead and she didn't want to go on living.
Okay, so it had no higher purpose than that.
No, because she, at the end, I mean, remember they were fighting and she gave him his death blow.
Yeah, I remember how she died. I just felt like, well...
No, I feel like...
She was very much for independence the entire time. And then, yeah, you're right. And then she, when he died...
That was it for her.
Yeah, that was it for her. So you're right. It wasn't a change of heart in any way.
No, and so Nameless is really between... That's what makes his choice interesting, because he is of the same opinion as her. He's like, no, I have family who died, you know, all my friends. No way.
A really interesting conversation between him and...
Broken Sword.
Broken Sword.
Mm-hmm.
When he has delivered this wound to... I can't remember all their names. Snow?
Flying Snow,
right?
Yeah.
Flying Snow, that's right. Yeah, he's delivered this wound to Flying Snow, and now he has what he needs, and he's on his way to go kill the Emperor. But Broken Sword is wounded, so he knows that he's no match. And then the calligraphy is something that I'm struggling to understand a little bit, but it's almost a depth or a wisdom
mm-hmm.
that is gained through this character writing. Which is really just writing and considering and meditating. And so the person with the most wisdom in the story is someone who believes in the unification. And that's the conclusion that he's come to after all of this time. And then he just writes those characters, you know, with his sword that says, our land.
Yeah, which they say... That was another thing. The other translation of that, which was mm-hmm. the first translation, is all under heaven.
All under heaven.
In the mm-hmm. Chinese version, there are actually three words, all under heaven. And the director changed it for this country out of the concern it wouldn't translate properly into our land.
See, that is way more better.
That's
all
what
under
I
heaven
thought.
Is just, that's really profound.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if you're saying we're all under heaven. Why are we fighting at all anyway? You know.
Yeah, and
I love that.
Worth sacrificing yourself, because what that does is it changes the whole. And maybe it's like the colors. It's, you know, our land works,
mm-hmm.
and maybe especially if you're Chinese. But for you and me, all under heaven. Well, what are you willing to give for the people that you love? Or it's the Wrath of Khan all over again. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Or the one.
Or the one, right.
That came up and I went, oh my gosh, I can never escape this amazing movie.
Everything you ever needed to know.
Right. Why are we watching, any other
Star
movie?
Trek,
we just should talk about it every week.
That's right.
But, yep. and the funny thing is that it isn't until... Now I'm having trouble with Jet Li, Nameless.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I couldn't remember his name. Nameless. Here's the Emperor speaking. He says, Broken Sword. He, when I look at this character, he understands. Or, you know, you tell me what he said to you. He understands what I'm getting at. And he's presented here as the more of the George Washington character that we, you know, in our country, we'd, George mm-hmm. Washington, as the noble, here's my bigger purpose. I have to kill people to do it because there's no other way to do it. But then he tells about his fight and that in the fight, which was amazing. I love all that stuff was going on. And then when they're done, the green veils are still falling and just finishing.
Yeah.
I'm like, but that aside.
It was
tough. Yeah, but aside, that's when everybody's refocused. Broken Sword is refocused after that fight. He tells Jet Li, Nameless, about it and has talked about the calligraphy that's hanging up and how he understands it now. And for some reason, that suddenly brings Jet Li's thoughts into focus. it all works for him. And who knows? Yeah. I mean, you don't really get, he doesn't talk a lot, and that's considered a strength for Jet Li, I think. You know, the emotional stuff is left for the other people.
Right. Yeah. You're right. I mean, he didn't show a lot of emotion. That conversation with Broken Sword was the most emotion I felt from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like the moments where he presented himself to Broken Sword and Flying Snow to give them his plan, which was told more than once and in different ways.
Yeah.
But that last one in the white, when, I don't know, there's a servant, that's there too.
Moon.
Moon, that's
her. Loved her. Yeah. She was so good.
She was fantastic. And, she takes on Jet Li. But that whole scene there in the library, you know, with all the sticks and everything.
Okay, with those books.
Let me show you what I can do from 10 paces.
He runs around.
Yeah. And then all this, everything just falls down. That was so cool.
Yeah, okay, we're listening.
Okay, now what I want to do is almost kill you.
I know. Well.
And she's like, I'll do it. I'll do it. And he's like, no.
Well,
so it really was moving. So even though Jet Li, you know, didn't show a whole bunch of emotion, I felt like it just worked so well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then that struggle at the end, I liked how he played that.
Yeah.
With him making that decision, and when he stepped up to the Emperor from 10 paces away and did not kill him, mm-hmm. that was pretty intense. And then he walked outside and stood there alone. I mean,
yeah,
that was very small, very alone, you know, from this big, larger than life person to a very small figure on a large wall. And for him to just stand there, I mean, that was really something.
And then turns around just with that smile on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, have you ever read I think it's medieval English poem called The Dream of the Holy Rood, R-O-O-D.
No, I have not.
I will send you a translation that Anthony Solon, if I say his name right, did. It's really great. And it's basically somebody who says, I had a dream, and it's told from like a Germanic Old English point of view. And the bard says, well, I fell asleep and I had a dream. And basically it's the crucifix that's telling him its story. I was a tree and I was roughly pulled apart pulled up and turned into this instrument of torture. And then I saw the young warrior.
Mm.
And it says, and the young warrior ran gladly up. And it makes the crucifixion into something where it's not like, please let this cup pass for me, because that point's gone. It's like, I'm ready. Let's do this thing. And the cross is like, all right, me too. And it's like, I took the pain of having the spikes into me, and I took this with the young warrior. And you're just like, oh my gosh, this is Lord of the Rings stuff. This is great. And it's that kind of thing that resonates with what Jet Li does at the end.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm not afraid, and I'm not just doing this because, oh, well, I have nothing else I could do. I am embracing my destiny. This is something I freely give you.
Yeah, that's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, not much more power than that. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I saw something that said, you know, this isn't called heroes, though you like to think they're all heroes. It's called hero. And I was going, oh. Well, because I like.
That's an interesting thought. What do you think that means? That there's only one amongst all of them?
Yeah.
Or are they each individually? Okay.
No, I think.
Just the one.
I thought, well, it's like, it's not saying everybody's a hero, although that quote at the beginning kind of makes it sound that way. But you look at all of them are being heroic in their own way. But who's the hero at the end of the movie? At the very end of the movie, the most heroic one to me was Jet Li, who got his power by putting down his sword. And the king wouldn't even do that. He let everybody talk him into it.
Yeah.
He could have said no, but he wasn't willing to possibly sacrifice himself or have to deal with that fallout either.
Right, right. Yeah, having... Yeah, where do you go from there? Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Where does Jet Li go from there? I mean, if he stayed alive, I'm sure the Emperor was like, okay. Yeah, I mean, all those thoughts he was having, I wish I could get inside his head a little bit and see what the Emperor was thinking. Because he was like, this. He came to the conclusion that this guy does need to die.
He had a sad look on his face, but it wasn't enough to stop him. He was one of the sacrifices.
And it was probably partially because he was a rival and legendary. And, yeah.
Well, and they said something about you swore that no assassins would be allowed to live or something. And if you do this, you're not the king we thought or something like that. So
a politician keeping his word.
Yeah, something like that.
I heard that happens sometimes.
Maybe he is a hero. Wait, hold on.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, that is good. That is good.
Well, one of the criticisms of the movie was that it was a support of totalitarianism or that maybe the Chinese government paid for it and it was justifying, the way they ran things. And I was like, I really agree that it's from a culture and a point of view that's not specifically American or Western.
Yeah.
And if it's mythic... That's what happens in mythic things. Empires are made.
Right. What about 300? This movie reminded me of that a little bit.
Oh,
although you like that movie a lot more than I did because I think I said something like this is a music video with people fighting in it.
You made me very sad when you said
I'm very sorry.
That's true. You're allowed to do that. You can have your own opinion.
Yeah. Looking back, this movie has that kind of a feel, doesn't it? Because 300 was about the Spartans,
mm-hmm.
and there was obviously a mythical quality about that whole movie.
Right.
So, it's similar. And that came out after this, I believe, didn't it? It had to have.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably. But, yeah, for me, just to digress briefly, for me, 300, it starts off with somebody kind of telling the story. And as I watched it, I could see this being the story, the way it's pictured in the people's minds as it's being told around the fires at night. So for me, that was a very mythic movie, even though it was more of a comic book telling of a mythic movie in a lot of ways. But it was that same thing of we're reaching into our past. It's a proud and glorious past. And so it wasn't ever meant to represent reality. It was representing how do they see it? Again, like, George Washington, or to go further back, since we're all Catholics, think about how we see the crucifixion.
Yeah.
Is it like the Hollywood epics? Is it like the Passion of the Christ? Is it, none of those are really how they happen. They're all somebody's very stylized view to us.
Yeah.
What do you see in your head? And so that's, for me, why 300 really worked.
Cool. That's really interesting. It's really interesting. And then what you said just reminded me of a person, I can't not remember who, so I apologize, but who told me that they don't like to watch movies with Jesus in it because they don't want those images. They don't want anybody intruding with their images. They want their own images.
But I feel those images are... To me, they're helpful. I mean, not all of them. But
sure.
There's little bits of them. In fact, our book club is going to read a book called Faces of Christ by Jane Williams. It's a small book. It's almost kind of like a devotional, but it's got picture after picture after picture of, the Annunciation and, the birth, the Nativity, and all these moments in Christ's life. And it's like, what is this person telling us about what they see in Christ? What are they saying about Christ here? Look how these people are acting this way. And so by explaining these pieces of art and then kind of going, so how do we see it? The contrast or whatever allows you to kind of take pieces of those and at least consider them, even if you don't absorb them yourself or you say, meh. But without bouncing other ideas off people, then you and I might as well never talk about a movie.
I agree with
that. I guess they're perfectly free to never watch a movie with Jesus in it, but I mean, in that sense, the incarnation doesn't work, because the whole point of the incarnation is Jesus is fully man, but he's fully God. It's the incarnation that allowed us to make pictures of Jesus. You know, when the Jews, the rule about don't make any idols, and so they didn't have no graven images. The thing that allows us to do that and still be in agreement with it is God himself gave us this physical picture of Jesus in his person.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we can do that.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's completely allowed.
Oh yeah.
Now, it may not help them.
Definitely.
I get it,
allowed.
I'm not putting them down. I'm just talking at this point.
You bet. And that is interesting. It is interesting. I can't think of any other movies like this.
No.
But yeah,
I can think of one.
Go ahead.
Sure. One movie like this that is like entering a piece of art, although in a completely different way, is called The Mill and the Cross.
The Mill and the Cross.
It is astounding, and we may be watching it when I pick a religious movie. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like entering an actual painting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it kind of pieces of it come to life, and it's, as Roger Ebert said, if you watch nothing else of this, watch at least the first 5 or 10 minutes. It's unlike anything you've ever seen.
Mm.
And this movie is kind of that way. Like you're saying, it's a piece, because it's a piece of art, it's unlike anything else, really.
Yeah, it really is. It is something, and it is something I'm going to watch again. I don't think I felt as disconnected with it as the reviewer that you were talking about. Or maybe, you know, I guess I could tell it wasn't from my own culture, but
mm-hmm.
I appreciated it at a pretty deep level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, have you seen Raise the Red Lantern? That's this director's first movie
he
won Academy Awards with it, I think, or was nominated, and so it brought him to great prominence, and it gets mentioned in a lot of reviews also, where they say, well, we knew it would be beautiful because of this. I hadn't seen it, but I was just curious.
No, I haven't seen anything else by this director.
Okay.
But I will. I mean, there's no doubt that I definitely, you know, I will.
Yeah, no, I wondered if I should look for that.
Yeah. There's one, The Bright Red Lanterns Hung High. But yeah.
I think that's Bright Red Lantern.
Is it? Yeah, different title.
Just a way to say it.
Yeah. But yeah, I appreciated him a lot. Very, very well done.
Yeah, and even though those themes are simple, watching them worked out from all those different points of view is really interesting, because you're caught up in the story the whole time. You know, now what is this person going to do? And it kind of takes you through it, too. You wind up at the end feeling, is this the right choice? I understand why he's making it. It seems glorious at the time, and then later you're left talking about it and thinking about it.
Right, and perhaps applying it to your own life, or
mm-hmm.
or you know, that's what these kinds of stories do for me, is you look at them and you look at decisions that were made, and you can see, you know, that's the thing about myth, you know, you can kind of put yourself, it's not like you're in the situation where you're in front of an emperor, and you know what I'm saying, but you have, there's elements. These archetypes or whatever, you can see them in your life if you think about it. You know, your decision is not going to be whether or not to assassinate an emperor.
Goodness.
But your decisions are often what's worth sacrificing for, and we're not talking about your life.
Your job.
It could be anything like that.
Yeah,
it's
that's
just. Yeah, you're not sacrificing the ultimate thing, but smaller things than these people did. But this story illuminates those things in your life.
And they all had small choices that got them to those big places.
Right.
You know, they had to be dedicated in their training. They had to have reasons to want to go on with it. They had to, I mean, you know, we don't see that because we're just seeing the big picture.
Right.
But every one of us, we don't know when we might have to make a big choice. I mean, the people facing the ISIS, did any of them stop and think, well, someday I'm going to have to stand there in front of these people and say, no, I remain a Christian, knowing my head's going to be cut off.
Yeah.
But sometimes, hopefully never to us, but, you know, that's the thing where the way you vote, the decisions you make at work, the way you do or don't understand what the boss is saying and do or don't go along with it, depending on how it goes along with your own morals code, those decisions are just as big. We just don't get to stand in front of a door and get shot full of arrows and it's all done for us. We have to go on living with it.
Yeah.
And that's like being shot full of arrows sometimes.
That's right. You're not kidding.
You make unpopular decisions. I mean, and especially as Catholics in today's world, it can just take speaking out about stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It can certainly make you feel quite alone, you know, at times. But
I'm not saying I feel like a martyr. I'm just saying these things come up sometimes. So
that they do, that they do. And, yeah, I mean, to imagine this guy spending 10 years of intense training and then get to his pinnacle and then, you know, get to his goal and decide not to follow through. It's fascinating, you know, to think about, you know, a parallel in your own life, perhaps, where, you know, what are you exactly? Are you a swordsman or is there something else there, you know? Is all you are what your talent is, or what your career is? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are thoughts that I've been having lately.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny I hadn't really just thought about the fact that he trained for 10 years for this, went through all this. Somehow when you said that thing about the 10 years, and I suddenly thought, but even though he was dedicated to that one goal, he still had to stop and think about the choice he was presented with. When he was presented with something new, he had to make his own decision. He wasn't somebody who was just so, you know, like flying snow, who in every scenario is kill the emperor. She has one note for that.
That's right. I mean,
she was a talented actor, showed many other notes, but that was her one note for plot-wise. And she never was going to be open to changing her mind. He had to at least take it in, mull it over, and see the possibilities and be able to see there's a greater truth. Everything I've so dedicatedly believed, I have to be big enough to throw it away and say, here's a different truth that nobody who suffered for him is going to understand. Because it's when the servant comes with the yellow flag, meaning the emperor is still alive, that she kills herself.
Right.
And so I hadn't really thought about that. Maybe that's the point of the story for me.
Could be. It could be. And it's a powerful point for me, too. What you just said is, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, because you can't think that what you believe is just within this little box. You can't let new things in and consider them. You have to always bounce them off what you know and test them.
Yeah.
Huh. Good one, Scott.
No, you said it.
Oh, well, thank you.
But no, you're right. Yeah. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Good stuff.
Powerful. That's what's so powerful about, you know, mythic stories. They can just touch you in that way.
Yeah.
You just got to stop and think about it a little bit. But yeah, I don't plan to be in a position to assassinate an emperor.
Oh, please. That's,
but yeah, that happens every day.
Yeah. I'm glad that you're big enough to turn it down.
You bet. I pulled a hammy when I started to train with the sword, so I had to pick something else to do.
Oh, okay. So you're doing calligraphy. Is that it?
That's right. Calligraphy. That's more my style.
I'm more like the servant. I'm just going to carry tea to people. Although she seems to know some kind of sword work now that I think about it, so I'm doomed. But
she was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad.
I loved all the actors in this. You know, they were all terrific.
They were great.
Yeah, really, really something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, well done, Jet Li. And I'm trying to think if there's any other movies with Jet Li in it that I've even seen. I'm just not much of a martial arts watcher.
Me either.
But I watch him sometimes, and wow, he's done a lot.
The only
I'm looking at the list of movies he's made. The latest being The Expendables 3.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe I haven't seen that.
He plays Yin Yang in The Expendables.
See right there.
The Expendables 2 and The Expendables 3.
Well, I will recommend another martial arts movie, but it's one that I do want us to watch and talk about sometime.
Uh-huh.
It's probably my favorite, although it's so different from this. It's called Kung Fu Hustle.
Kung Fu
Have
Hustle.
Have you heard it or seen it?
No,
I mean,
no,
heard of it. It's funny because it's one of those that it's like a parody of the Hong Kong martial arts movies, but it's actually a really good martial arts movie, and it tells a mythic story of its own. And it's by I think he's a Hong Kong movie director who also is in love with Western pop culture. And it really shows in this movie, which is a great movie. So, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Nice.
It's funny and that kind of thing. As you know, I'm always more of a Shaun of the Dead sort of a vibe person you know, so this is more that kind of thing.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's great. That's great.
So.
Well, before we go, I wanted to make sure that I got some quick commentary on Interstellar. Is that a film that we are going to be talking about someday?
I feel like it is.
Oh, good.
It is
Inception, that makes me very happy.
In my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's not as focused as Inception was,
mm-hmm.
but wow, there's a lot there.
Oh, good.
And it's, it's Christopher Nolan all over the place. So if you like Christopher Nolan, it's the people who I've talked to who like it. Everybody agrees that there were pieces they thought should have been cut. But what I think is really interesting is nobody ever agrees on what they think should have been cut.
Interesting.
I know. I said, cool. I think this section should have been cut. And Rose went, what? No, this thing on the spaceship should have been cut. I'm like, oh, no, we needed that. So I feel like it should have been more focused and maybe about 20 minutes worth gone, but I'm not sure what. And I'd love, there's a comment I'm just dying to make, but I can't until you've seen it and then we're talking about it. But
okay, cool.
Yeah.
Did McConaughey get his shirt off in this movie?
And I never heard, all right, all right, all right. You know, once somebody becomes a serious Oscar contender again, then...
Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah.
I love it.
You've heard that this is being called the McConaissance, right?
No.
Yeah, no,
that's a funny word. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Because,
that's cool.
Actually, there's a new podcast. Have you heard of the movie critic Leonard Maltin?
Yes.
Yeah, because he's a longtime guy, and I've never really read his stuff. I'm not sure where he's published, but I've never come across it. But he started a podcast. He, and I believe it's an acting friend of his who's not anybody I've heard of, but the second episode was about Matthew McConaughey movies.
Oh, cool.
And they try to always do one they liked, one they didn't like, and then a sleeper.
Uh-huh.
And this was really good, that episode, because they talked about his whole career and the fact that he started off like doing really great roles and people were like, oh, and then he went into this whole rom-com thing where everyone went, oh, that's McConaughey, huh? Like, which is where I discovered him. And they said, now everyone's going, oh, he's back to doing great stuff.
That's cool.
But it's a pretty good podcast. It's about an hour
long and
actually pretty interesting. Yeah, I heard of that. They said the McConaissance is on. But yeah, I liked it. I recommend it. I think it has got tons of stuff that we are going to want to talk about.
Nice.
And maybe as soon as it's out on DVD, we should watch it.
Okay, let's do that.
I can't wait till you see it to hear what you think of it.
Cool, cool. Well, I saw a movie last week. Just real quickly, Big Hero 6.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Oh, good.
My daughter absolutely loved it, and I liked it quite a bit. It just, John Lasseter has done a hell of a job with Disney. Because this is a Disney
right.
movie, and not a Pixar movie.
Right.
But he's kind of over both of them right now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the executive producer of this, and boy, he took that ship and put it in the right direction, I think.
Good. Well, that's what made me want to see it, because it had that fresh feel that it's not something you've seen from Disney for a while.
Right. And there is a lot of things that you'll recognize from other things,
mm-hmm.
Which could be a negative. You know, not specifically from other animated features, but you know, you call them homage or out of ideas, maybe. but the whole feel, it was fun. Mm-hmm. Extremely fun movie, and I thought it was great.
Oh,
I really
good.
Liked it.
Good.
And it looked good, too. Another work of art.
Yeah. Well, the trailers looked really good, and we just don't go to see tons of movies. So when we do, it tends to be something like Interstellar, where you feel like it's going to matter. And we did see it in the, oh, gosh, what is it? The 35 millimeter, whatever, the regular movie theater.
Oh, okay.
It still looked fantastic.
That's good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
So, again, thank you for picking this movie. I really...
Oh, I'm glad.
This is such, you know, definitely going on the shelf.
Yeah, oh.
So...
Yeah, I actually bought it because it was unbelievably
inexpensive. I'm
going
to have to, too,
and
I can sure see myself wanting to see that.
Yeah, and I said, I can't believe I don't own this. I must watch it often, so...
Yeah, cool.
Good.
All right. Well, what do we got coming up next? We've got In This House of Breed... by Rumor Godden.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right, all right, all right.
No shirts are coming off.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And then for Christmas time, we're going to watch It's a Wonderful Life.
Such a wonderful movie. I'm so glad
you watched it. Such a wonderful movie. Cool, thanks. That's fun. And that'll be it for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then off to January.
I know, and... You'll start us off with a book, I guess, since we'll just keep our sequence.
Ooh, I better get her picked.
Yeah, well, don't you think?
Yeah, sure.
And that'll be episode 99.
99 will be the first one of January.
That will be surprise 100th celebration.
100. Isn't that what they say? No, that's not Texan, is it?
No.
100.
I didn't know
who says 100.
Saying.
Yeah.
Completely foreign to me, sir. Is that how you talk in Utah?
Yeah.
I see. I'm going to get angry letters now. Is it Utahans?
Utahans.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awkward.
I was going to tell a story about my daughter, but now I won't.
Oh, all right.
Well, no, I'm going to tell it because it's going to make me smile.
Tell me.
She was born in Logan, Utah. Which is where we happen to live now, because the town that we used to live in is only about like 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
So we lived in Idaho, but she was born in Utah. So she was maybe 4 years old. We drive to, in Logan. We're in Logan, which is where we would go to watch a movie or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove by the hospital, and I pointed to the hospital and said, Alex, you were born in that building right there. Isn't that amazing? And she got really quiet, little 4-year-old in the back seat, really quiet. And I'm like, what's wrong, sweetie? And she goes, does that mean I'm a Utard? Which is what her little friends called people from Utah. So
sorry, darling.
She was, a permanently just burned in my memory. I was in tears. I laughed so hard. And now I live in Utah.
Yeah, you're all Utards together.
So yes, no no offense to anyone from Utah who have all turned off the podcast now.
Oh yeah, I took care of that early so you could tell that story. You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, I know. I do what I can.
All right.
So.
Well, on that note.
Yes, everybody have a good Thanksgiving.
Yes, you bet.
I have much to be
Enjoy
thankful
yourselves.
For, including this podcast. So, thank you, Scott.
I feel the same way. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for listening.
You bet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see you in a couple of weeks, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.